Hello, gorgeous.
I would make a great queen because I am so stubborn.
Well, when I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
Never take a learning opportunity away from another student. No matter how smart you need everyone to think you are.
I am dancing a bright beam of light.
Teen is your family. You have to protect them from those guys, okay?
Make the money. Don't let it make you.
You had me at hello.
And most importantly, you must always have faith in yourself.
This is I'm Here for the Food.
What's up, everybody? This is I'm Here for the Food, where we discuss topics that feed your mind, your spirit, and your soul. I am Melissa.
I'm Blue.
Blue is here from us remotely because she is
in a safe location.
She is under quarantine because, well, for the obvious, a lot of us are under quarantine. I sound like I should be under quarantine, but that's just exhaustion on my part. I feel like I haven't stopped moving for the last like 5 months. So this is really just exhaustion. I'm just getting back from a wedding that I helped to connect the two people that get married. I can always seem to do it for myself or for other people. I can't do it for myself. This is ridiculous. And hopefully I'm going to do it for all of you when we do I'm Here for the Food, the speed dating event that we keep talking about. But I just wanted to give you guys a big shout out and thank you for subscribing. And if you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on iTunes. We are on Spotify. We are on iHeart. And we are also on YouTube. So hit that little subscribe button. Send us a review. 5 stars like your Uber driver. And we thank you so much. I have Dr. Noelle Reed sitting next to me from Trinity Health and Wellness. And she's actually my doctor. So we're not going to get into my personal medical business today.
No.
What we're going to do is we're going to address what has everybody freaked out, either rolling their eyes or freaking out. One of the two. I just have to ask this one question. Have you stocked up on toilet paper? That's the question I'm going to start off with right now.
I made my Costco run about 2 to 3 weeks ago.
Good for you, because you saw it coming, I guess, since you're a doctor.
So we're good for right now.
Okay, good.
Paper.
Okay, good. You have a family that you got to worry about.
Yeah.
I just have one ass in the house. So, you know, 4 rolls are probably going to last me about 4 weeks, maybe. So I think...
Ew.
Listen, Linda, if not, I could just like go get some leaves from outside or something, okay? We are very, very spoiled as a society in 2020, okay?
Yeah.
We are starting to forget that, oh, water comes out of the tap. Why is everybody buying gallons and gallons of water? I'm like, you guys do realize it's the same water that comes out of the faucet. Or you could buy a Brita water filter. Oh my God, you just have to take water out of the tap, filter it through the Brita water filter, and wow, you create less waste to end up in the oceans. I don't know. Let me just stop preaching. And by the way, and say my doctor is ridiculously fly. Can we get a shot of these boots? Like, God.
You know, I had to come correct on, I'm here for the food.
You look perfect. Blue, doesn't she look amazing?
Yeah, she's a lot. I didn't think your doctor was quite this attractive.
Yeah,
it doesn't hurt.
She's gorgeous. She's gorgeous. And just correct me if I'm wrong. You're on LA's version of Married to Medicine. Am I wrong about that?
50% right.
So okay.
I was on Married to Medicine LA. I am not doing the second season.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How was your experience? Because I've been on reality TV.
You've been on Bravo before too.
Yeah. I feel like your experience might have been a lot more pleasant than mine.
Maybe, maybe not.
It's
stressful,
yeah.
You know, especially when you have a real job. You know, mm-hmm. like I run a practice every day. So mm-hmm. to have to do that and then film, mm-hmm. you know, for the amount of time that they wanted me to film during that time, that definitely was stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think we kind of decided to part ways and just wasn't a good fit.
Knowing you, what I know about you, I could never see you being on reality TV because it's just, there's just this overwhelming need to like kind of get a little ratchet. You know what I mean? And just, and you're just so, you know, even keeled and soft spoken and really sweet and really kind. And you just aren't with the shits. You're just really not.
And you know what? That's one of the reasons why I decided to do it is because, well, really two main reasons. One is that, you know, as a black woman, as a black female physician, where we are not well represented, you know, in terms of those physicians that practice in the U.S. today, only 2% are African-American female. There certainly is a disparity in that realm. I felt that it was necessary for us to be seen. So I did think that it was a format to where that could happen. But it's going to happen on my terms.
Right.
And I'm going to have to be able to show my truest self.
Right.
And not what somebody else has created for me.
Right.
And that is the issue that you run into when you do reality TV is that you really have no control.
And when you have an ensemble cast of other women that might have other agendas.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If you had maybe a show like Dr. Pimple Popper show, then you could show your own life basically on, you know, executively produce the story of your life. But with an ensemble cast,
you can't really do that. Yeah. And, you know, what I learned very early on just in, you know, being in entertainment for a short period of time is that there is no power in being talent alone.
Right.
You know, so if you don't find yourself on both sides of the camera lens, then your voice is not going to get heard. Your vision is not going to get seen. So it was really futile. And I think I did go in a bit naively to think that, well, maybe if I showed them something a little bit different, then that could perhaps spark a change. But I just think that the powers that be aren't ready for that.
Right.
Not in that realm, not in reality TV. And it's unfortunate because reality TV has really become a part of our culture.
Yes, so very much so.
Inundated with what, you know, we're seeing. And so for me, it's disheartening because I think about my daughter.
Yeah.
And I think about other people's daughters and sons who are only seeing these images, which for the most part, especially when it comes to black women, are negative. They're not the full view of who we are, as we are very, you know, varied and diverse and highly intelligent. And the energy level that's brought in is so low.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where they're taking us.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's what I call digital junk food.
Yeah.
You know, it's, so it's like where it's exciting. It hits that palate just right, you know, so it gets you going just like junk food does. You know, it's hyper palatable. You love to watch it and perhaps even become addicted because those dopamine receptors
are firing
off.
I was about to say, it's a dopamine hit.
It's a dopamine hit. But at the end of the day, is it really feeding your soul?
No, you know? it's not. It's not. And you're right about you're right about the representation of black women always being very consistent and the negative stereotype perpetuated that we only know how to solve conflict with combat.
Exactly.
You know, and being extraordinarily confrontational. So it perpetuates this this really shitty stereotype about us, you know, being just the neck snapping and
just
and
into
finger
the archetypes that have been created for decades when we talk about, you know, the angry black women, the mammy, the Jezebel, you know, really pushing us into those categories. And it's like, if you don't fit into that mold, then you just don't fit.
Right.
And that's not correct because that is not who we are. And so what I don't want is for my daughter to see that and think that that's the norm. That's how she's supposed to carry herself. And that is how she's supposed to deal with conflict. And not only that, but for people who don't look like us. You know, to see that and think that that is what the expectation should be.
Right.
Which is typically a lower expectation.
Right.
So I could not see myself continuing on in that realm if I was not going to have any power.
I have a question
that
about that.
Yeah.
So I had to recently, not recently, like last year, we wrote a lot about Serena Williams and about how when she was going through complications with childbirth, she had to advocate like adamantly as an athlete, as an A-lister, to get some necessary tests, and those tests actually ended up saving her life. And so after that, she became really passionate about realizing the disparity in how black women are treated by the medical profession. They tend to not take their concerns as seriously. They don't test them as rigorously. The strong black woman stereotype is actually used subconsciously to keep black women from getting the same kind of care that their counterparts get. And this is data, it's not opinion. And a lot of black women are dying because we're seen as these mules that can take pain more than our damsel white counterparts. And so the fact that racism in the medical community as patients has led to so much death and mortality rates, I never thought about it until you mentioned it. Do you experience any of that on the other side as a black female doctor? Like, do you see that same kind of racism from your counterparts that us patients are getting from them when we go into the room with them.
So do you mean racism as the Black physician or just?
Yeah, well, I'm wondering if there's so many physicians that are admitting now that they don't provide the same level of care to mm-hmm. Black women. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, do you get any kind of slight from them as colleagues, or do you witness them treating Black female patients differently since there's so much data mm-hmm. now supporting that as something that's happening pretty like everywhere?
You know, I wouldn't say that I've ever experienced any overt racism, you know, mm-hmm. where, you know, it's clearly that, you know, before me, a clinician is purposely not doing something or purposely not, you know, running a test or listening to an individual. I think it's more subtle. Mm-hmm. I think it's more so just what the thought is in terms of how the communication goes on between a clinician and the patient. And that it's difficult to kind of pinpoint, but you know that it exists because of what you mentioned. When you look at the endpoints, that mm-hmm. for us as African-American women, we're at the bottom of the totem pole.
Right.
Across the board.
Yes.
And almost every health category.
Yes.
So whether you're talking about heart disease, whether you're talking about diabetes, stroke, breast cancer, we have the highest mortality rates. And so I think that where that comes in line is that perhaps, you know, they don't think to do the next step, mm-hmm. you know? So if perhaps an African-American woman comes in and complains of chest pain, that, you know, they don't do the next higher level of research in terms of, well, maybe we should do a cardiac MRI and not just only an EKG at this point, where perhaps a woman in another ethnic group would have gotten that cardiac MRI, mm-hmm. you know, or don't trust the words that are being said by the African-American female patient mm-hmm. versus the other. So I think it's more insidious. I don't think that it's overt that I'm seeing, you know, at this. I have not seen that at this time, but I would say as a Black female doctor, having to kind of combat, you know, the prejudices and the misconceptions when it comes to being a female and a woman of color. So always having that feeling that you have to prove your position, prove mm-hmm. your point, you know, and that, you know, you are here by your own merit and not because you were just allowed to be here because we had to get the numbers.
Right.
You know, I do think right. that is still very prevalent. And not only that from, you know, colleagues, but also from the public. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's been many occasions where I have walked in and it's my practice.
Yeah.
You know, my name is on the door. Mm-hmm. My name is etched across my chest. Mm-hmm. I have a stethoscope around my neck. Uh-huh. But I walk into the room and the patient still asks, well, where's the doctor? When is she coming in? And it's just like,
I know.
I'm standing in front of you.
This
right
is
now.
Where I would say that the whole, you know, beauty is a gift and a curse. The curse part mm-hmm. comes in because you're constantly, you know, sometimes unintentionally undermined
that
by almost
true.
Everybody because you
true.
Are just, you're so young and you're so attractive that they just, the assumption is like,
well,
are you like a pretty nurse?
Going back to that show, you yeah. know, why I decided, well, let me do this so perhaps we can change the social construct of what a doctor looks like. Mm-hmm. Because I think that in our minds across the board, whether you're talking about different gender or you're talking about different race, what someone thinks that a doctor looks like may not look like me.
Right.
So that is the knee-jerk reaction is to say, well, oh, so you're the nurse? Are you the assistant?
Yeah.
You know, no, I'm the doctor.
Yeah.
You know, so we have to be able to change the construct of what that is so that when they do see me walk in, oh, this is the norm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. One thing I did want to say, kind of piggybacking off of the whole notion of negative perception is what is happening with coronavirus and what it's kind of doing to people. Mm-hmm. It is inciting racism mm-hmm. against Asian mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. globally.
Yeah.
And it's frightening that yeah. that's what's happening because there's just so much misinformation going around. There's
for
just
sure.
so much, you know, one of the reasons why I had to have you on, this is extremely a timely episode. We had somebody completely different booked. And then, I mean, like the news is coming in hour by hour. I just flew in from Phoenix and prior to me having left, there was no talk of restrictions on domestic flying. And now there is. Yeah. What it looks like is about to happen is martial law. And that terrifies me on so many levels because we're literally handing over our civil liberties. Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like to me because, you know, what we need to do is separate fact from fiction. Mm-hmm. So one of my main questions is in terms of a comparison between coronavirus and, say, the average seasonal flu, mm-hmm. which one would you say is, I don't know, more harmful to the average person? And mm-hmm. I'm not talking about a 75-year-old man with mm-hmm. a pre-existing a respiratory issue. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about an able-bodied 35-year-old woman or man mm-hmm. who's in the prime of their life and tip-top health.
Yeah.
What would you say?
So it's not exactly black and white because there's multiple variables that you have to take into account.
Okay.
So as far as we know at this point, COVID-19, okay, so the novel virus that causes COVID-19, for the majority of cases causes mild illness. So mm-hmm. approximately 80% of individuals who will come across COVID-19 will be fine.
Yeah.
Right? They will likely not have symptoms. Mm-hmm. About 14% of individuals may have some complications.
Okay.
So maybe pneumonia. And about 2% will likely succumb to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So overall, 98% of individuals who come in contact with COVID-19 will survive.
Okay.
Okay. So that is a good thing.
Yes.
In terms of comparing it to influenza, you know, certainly has been around a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
As it stands now, the numbers certainly are strikingly a lot higher.
Yes.
Okay. So when you look at the CDC estimates, for this season alone, flu has caused anywhere from 36 million to 51 million cases
mm-hmm.
in the U.S. alone for this flu season.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of deaths, 22,000 to about 55,000 deaths
mm-hmm.
due to influenza.
Mm-hmm.
When you compare that to COVID-19, as it stands now, and mm-hmm. this is an ever-evolving process, that there has been just over, I think we're now in the 3,000 mark now in terms of cases.
Global.
No, cases that right. we have found in the U.S.
Okay.
We are just over 50 deaths in the U.S.
Okay.
Globally, it has caused just over 6,000 deaths.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly the numbers do not match up.
Mm-hmm.
However, we are in the early stages of this. So we don't exactly. know exactly where this is going to go. What we do know is that it causes mild illness. And so when that happens, that can really be a blessing and a curse.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being is that when someone is infected with a mild illness, where are they?
Mm-hmm.
They're usually at home around their family members.
Mm-hmm.
They may be in schools. They've closed the schools now. And there's a reason for that. They may be at work. So they're more likely to allow a virus to do what a virus does. And that's follow its next viable host.
Yeah.
So it can make it more challenging to control a virus like that, as opposed to a virus that causes more severe illness. So let's say comparing that to a SARS and a MERS,
mm-hmm.
which are also coronaviruses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so these viruses caused epidemics in 2002, 2012, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that when individuals were infected with SARS or MERS, there was more significant symptoms. They were more likely to be hospitalized if they were ill, so less likely out in the community, and more likely to succumb to the virus.
Right.
So the death rates with those were about 10% and 34% respectively.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is when someone's infected, they're in a controlled setting more likely than not, and they succumb to it. So the viral cycle essentially has an endpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a little bit easier to control that versus a virus that's smart enough to get you sick,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily to kill you in most instances. So in that case, it's harder to kind of keep it from continuing to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
So that is why we're kind of in this uproar at this point, which, you know, it is definitely, you know, challenging to deal with, because this is a new normal that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And I can't say that I've ever seen anything like this.
I don't think anybody's ever seen, not in modern history.
Right.
We have not seen anything like this. The influenza virus, I think it was called Spanish flu in 1918,
mm-hmm.
is what keeps coming up in conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to get anywhere near that
yeah.
because that was about 50 to 100 million people who died.
Mm-hmm.
There's mass graves everywhere as a result of trying to contain the virus from the people who perished and not wanting it to mm-hmm. spread any further. We don't want to get anywhere near
right.
that. But I think what is slightly destructive and what is allowing this kind of manufactured mass hysteria to continue is the fact that it seems like we're what's only being discussed in media outlets is the amount of cases that have popped up, the amount of cases of people who have contracted it, not the cases of people who are recovering from it. What's not being openly discussed is the average patient who has succumbed to it and their age and the fact that they had a pre-existing condition. And that is lending to, like I said,
the hysteria. And that's why we have to be very careful when we give this information, because there is a fine line between being very honest about what the risks are and, you know, not underplaying the concern, but not overly exciting individuals. And I think sometimes it's difficult to kind of balance that. But I think what people should know is this, is that, yes, 98% of us that will come across this virus will survive. But it is our responsibility to take care of that 2%. And so that means it is necessary for us to minimize human contact. So it makes sense that we close the schools. It makes sense that we minimize the travel, because you have to consider, you know, yes, you and I, all of us in this room today will likely be fine if we came across COVID-19. You know, we will be okay. But what happens when we come home and we go see Aunt Mary, who's 65 with diabetes and heart disease? What is her outcome going to be?
Probably less successful.
Less successful.
I have a question about that, actually. So as the person who actually wouldn't probably survive it, to be perfectly honest, I found it a little bit insulting, and this is a thing that a lot of my friends have been calling me about, because health is very subjective, and I have an invisible autoimmune disorder. So what's wrong with me is invisible. So I look healthy, I sound healthy. I have a lot of other friends with lupus who look healthy and who sound healthy. And so I think people think healthy is based on optics, and people are very shallow about the definition of healthy. And when they hear terms like compromised immune system, they're not thinking about me. I actually have a compromised immune system. They're not thinking about my friends with really bad asthma who look normal, like you guys, who have a compromised immune system. They're not thinking about people with lupus who have a compromised immune system. And there's a lot of people out there who have compromised immune systems who, because they look like me and they act normal and they talk normal and they don't look crippled or whatever the term is, they're walking around thinking they're okay when they should be at home the way I am. And so do you think you could maybe give some clarity about what constitutes a compromised immune system? Because there's a lot of people out there. For me, that 3% includes a lot of people that I love and care about. So I get a little bit squeamish when we throw away 3%, because like my friend said, if staying home and washing your hands saves one life, I don't think this is hysteria.
For sure.
So if it saves 6,000 lives, I don't think that's hysteria. To stay home, because if it was your mother or your father or your husband, that 3% would suddenly start mattering to you a lot. And so I think it's a little selfish to act like we're going to throw away that 3% because everybody else is fine, because I'm part of that 3%. So could you give some clarity on what a compromised immune system actually looks like?
And you bring up an excellent point. You know, one life is too many. So yes, exactly. We should not minimize the 2% at all. And I don't think that the medical community is doing that. It's just in a means of trying to explain that to individuals. So, yes, when we talk about immunocompromised, in terms of what the data has shown, because there was some surveillance study that was done in China, the Chinese CDC did look at, you know, the mortality rates amongst the age ranges as well as pre-existing conditions. And what they found is that there was some variance in terms of what pre-existing conditions had more of a dramatic or more disastrous outcome versus others. Heart disease was number one. Following that was diabetes, and that just below that was chronic lung disease. Now, chronic lung disease can include many things. So it could be asthma. It could be COPD. You know, chronic bronchitis. So all of those things, you know, kind of are included within that realm. But then when you also talk about other compromised states, so yes, autoimmune conditions such as lupus, for sure. If you are immunocompromised because you're taking medicines mm-hmm. that cause for you to have some immunosuppression. Yeah. So if you're on steroids, you know, prednisone or other immunomodulators mm-hmm. that you may be on if you have some type of autoimmune or rheumatologic disease like rheumatoid arthritis. So those are some other examples of having an immunocompromised state. Pregnancy. Mm-hmm. is an immunocompromised state, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, it is harder for pregnant women to fight off infections, and hence why we're, you know, protective over them during flu season, and as well as they should be with COVID-19, because they could have complications during this time because pregnancy is a compromised state. So yes, I do think that we have to be more broad in terms of what we look at for a vulnerable group as a whole. But typically, you know, if you're communicating with your doctor, mm-hmm. then your doctor would know that. So if you were concerned at any point, you know, that's always your first, that should be your first line of defense, is calling your primary care doctor to say, hey, look, I'm having these symptoms. It's questionable contact with my current status of health and what you know about me. You know, what should I do at this point?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, foodies, we have another favorite thing and a deal for you. We've discovered a tasty new way to stay on your fitness and hydration goals. Liquid IV is a vitamin packet that you can throw into your water bottle and chug. It's got vitamins C, B complex, and potassium. Are you dehydrated from a hangover? I oftentimes am. They've got you covered. Liquid IV is the fastest, most efficient way to stay hydrated. I don't know about you, but my lifestyle is so hectic, from all the flying that I do, the hot lights I'm always under, from filming, stuff like that. It makes me perpetually dehydrated. I love Liquid IV because it hydrates me quicker and more efficiently than plain water. It helps me power through my workouts as well, and it tastes awesome. See? That's how easy it is. Now, besides all that, I love a company with a philanthropic side, and Liquid IV is on a mission to change the world. They've donated 2 million servings to places like Haiti, Uganda, Puerto Rico, and Nepal. So, foodies, yum, we are hooking you up. Go to liquidiv.com and use the code foodie to get 25% off your complete order. That's liquidiv.com for 25% off of your order. And that code again is foodie, FOODIE. Don't say we don't do anything for you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, when it comes to, when I talk about manufactured mass hysteria, it's not the medical community that I'm talking about. I think by and large, you guys have been very responsible with the way that you,
yeah, you have
spoken about the concerns that the public should have. Mm-hmm. It's the media that, like, it's CNN, it's Fox News, it's these headlines blaring, screaming at us,
yes,
you know, that are inciting mm-hmm. unnecessary fear.
Yeah.
I do believe, like, listen to the way I sound. I'm surprised anybody in this room wants to come anywhere near me, you know, because of the way I sound, honestly. And this is another thing that I want to mention that is bothering me. Like I said, there have been reports because of this mass hysteria, there's instances of racism against Asian people,
yeah,
like on the rise, like a massive uptick, which frightens me. That's number one. Number two, in the language in which we use to discuss this mm-hmm. is also another cause of concern for me. When we say, I have a cold, I got the flu, you mm-hmm. know, nobody bats an eyelash. Mm-hmm. I've contracted COVID-19. What else do you contract?
HIV.
You contract herpes. You contract mm-hmm. all these communicable yes. diseases that have this stigma attached to mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
And what also frightens me about not just the language that we're using to discuss this and the ignorance that most people have when you hear these words or mm-hmm. like the automatic emotional reaction that they have to it.
Mm-hmm.
What also just concerns me is it just seems like we're operating from a standpoint of lack right now. These mm-hmm. testing kits, they're like yeah. these magical things that are invisible to us. Like, it seems like what everybody in the world is being tested by and large, but here in the US, yeah. there is like Trump's been tested, and let me be clear, he got tested and they said he's negative. I don't believe that for a second.
I don't know whether to believe it or not.
Not for a second. Like, he came into contact with way too many people that tested positive for it and have succumbed to it. What'd you say, Blue?
He came in contact with, like, five people who had it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So
you bring up very valid points. And I think that, unfortunately, we are in a crisis where our administration has not been the strongest.
Oh, no.
Okay. So when you have someone mention the virus as being foreign, okay, and I'm talking about the president right now, there's no such thing as a foreign virus.
Right.
Okay. So to, you know, put it in a they category when that does not exist, when you talk about global health, because we're in a global community, this is our issue. Mm-hmm. It is an us problem. So I think that that is what is likely leading to the misinterpretation of things and how people are kind of running with this and saying, you know, this is a foreign virus. This is an Asian virus. No, a virus does not discriminate based upon ethnicity or melanin, because you have the other side of the spectrum where people are saying, well, Black people can't get COVID-19, which is not the case. Yes, in the African nations, we have not seen as many cases, but there could be many factors that are playing into that, such as infrastructure. You know, the fact that maybe there's not enough testing that's happening in those nations, so we're not aware, you know, or the fact that the infrastructure is a little bit different. So when you are in, you know, anywhere in the African diaspora, in some of the African nations or in the Caribbean where we're not really seeing it, there's not necessarily as tight quarters as we might have in a China or a Japan or what have you. So, you know, the risk of exposure may be less as well. So there's other factors that come into play. So, yes, I do think that it's rather disheartening when we have, you know, discrimination and racism based upon a virus. And this is not the first time that it's happened. The same thing happened when we had the Ebola outbreak and people were discriminating against those of color. Same thing with MERS. You know, there's always been this kind of, you know, tie to an ethnic group and a virus that is not necessary.
And, then blame is assigned.
And blame.
Yeah.
And I think what happens is oftentimes people get scared. So they want to find a reason to say that, oh, that's not me. It's not coming for me. I don't have anything to do with that. But we have to get away from that because the reality is we are in a global community. And so my health is affected by your health. You know, our determinants of health are based upon many things, but community health is one of them. So that means that if we're going to take care of each other, if we're going to take care of ourselves, we have to take care of each other. And we have to look at it in that sense. And then that also leads into the mass hysteria in terms of people hoarding things, like hoarding toilet paper and hand sanitizer and whatever it is. And it's like, okay, you have tons of hand sanitizer in your home and I don't. So if I get sick, are you not going to be affected? Like, it makes absolutely no sense. So I think that we really have to change our mind and start to be more selfless and more community oriented, because our health is at stake for because of that.
I landed in Burbank Airport today after going to Phoenix for a wedding, and I decided to go to my, I used to live in the Valley, so I went to my favorite Ralph's. And when I drove up, I didn't see a line outside. So I was like, okay, it might be all right. It was 7:59 in the morning on a fucking Sunday. I walked in. It was the beginning of pandemonium. Okay. I saw some shelves were empty. There was produce. I was like, I'm only here for celery and some kale. Y'all can keep the fucking cleaning supplies. I'm good. I don't need no toilet paper. I'm fine. Maybe some soup. And then I went down the soup aisle. Oh, all the canned goods
gone.
The non-perishables gone. What's crazy to me is the produce section and how full it was, but the non-perishable canned.
Your produce section was full?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was empty. Wow.
It was, I don't, maybe they'd re-upped or something like that, but I was just like, you know, everybody, what is being advised to you is to wash your hands, which we've been taught since we were 5 years old. eat your fruits and veggies. you know, like the ones that were just picked from the vines and pulled from the ground, not the ones in cans that are, you know, loaded with preservatives and stuff. I just wish that people would start using a little bit more common sense. Led by their fears, you know, because our fears tend to be really irrational, you know. We gotta get
and
a grip.
Contagious.
You know,
energy is contagious.
I have a question about what you mentioned about stigma.
Yes.
Because that was a beautiful point, right? We're doing this because we don't want to catch it, and we don't want to spread it to people who might be immune or not have a strong immunity, right? But I was thinking about, what about those people who do have it? Mm-hmm. Because remember when that Usher thing happened, when there was all these rumors that Usher accidentally spreading herpes to his partners? I had a girlfriend who actually has herpes, and she said that she was very triggered. Hmm. Even though they were talking about Usher, she was triggered because they were talking about something that she was living with and grappling with and trying to date with. And so when Melissa mentioned this thing about stigma, for someone who actually does like get the coronavirus, like Tom Hanks is the most beloved white man in history.
Yes.
We love Tom Hanks. He must be protected at all costs. Mm-hmm. When he came forward and said he had it, there was a softening in the way that people talked about it because we love Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. Like, why did it have to be him? We love him, right? Mm-hmm. But not everybody's going to get that grace. And so if you do know somebody who has coronavirus, medically, what's that line between being a compassionate friend but still protecting yourself without stigmatizing them? Because I personally, because when I have an endometriosis flare-up and I'm on these medications that stress my body out, I often get a cold. I can't even fight off the common cold when I'm in this state, let alone corona. And so if I meet somebody that I love who has it, how do I protect myself without making them feel judged and stigmatized?
For sure. And that's an excellent point. And I think that, you know, what we have to understand is that, you know, this is a temporary illness. It's not as if you get COVID-19 and you have it for the rest of your life. You know, nor do you have to be quarantined for the rest of your life. So there are certain guidelines that are recommended and to be in place when you have a person of interest. So someone who is currently suspected or being tested for COVID-19, or you are a positive. And so that means that essentially, for at least 14 days, they have to be within self-quarantine, meaning that they should not come in contact with someone else less than 6 feet away from them. If you do have to be in contact with them, that, you know, they should be wearing a mask, and their loved one or their friend should be wearing a mask. Also, interestingly enough, as I'm sitting next to your beloved right here,
they can't get it. Okay.
Well, you have if you're symptomatic, you should also distance yourself from your pets.
Oh, I can't. So, I need her. That is my my emotional support animal right there, who has abandoned me in my hour of need and sitting next to our guest, but that's fine. She's the mascot.
She likes me. But we don't know. We don't have significant data at this point to suggest that there would be an issue with domesticated animals. Right. But we know this is a zoonotic virus, right? So that means that the virus transmitted from an animal to a human. So I think under an abundance of caution, it is recommended when you're in isolation to not be close to your pets, specifically when you are symptomatic. Okay. So there are certain precautions that you should have in place. So yes, you can love them from afar, you know, but during that time, so typically, and again, things change by the day. As it stands now, when someone has been, if it's been 14 days from the date of onset of symptoms, and or they've been without fever and other symptoms for at least 3 days without the use of over-the-counter medicines, typically they are in the clear. But what should happen is that an individual that has tested positive, they are followed by a public health nurse, right? And so that public health nurse is checking in with them. And when the public health department says you are free, then you are free. You know, you are free to go along about the rest of your life. And typically that means also they have retested you and you have tested negative. So yes, it doesn't mean that forever you can't be around that loved one. But as we're trying to control this virus right now, there is a specific period of time where there shouldn't be close contact.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, so for the audience, discuss the symptoms that are associated with COVID-19, and discuss the incubation period where you may not be symptomatic, and then mm-hmm. what it looks like when that comes on. And like you said that there's a 14-hour self-quarantine 14-day self-quarantine phase mm-hmm. that should be adhered to. Mm-hmm. But talk to us about like mm-hmm. the beginning stages yeah. and what that looks and sounds like for everybody.
So the typical signs and symptoms of someone with COVID-19 would be fever. Mm-hmm. And so that's typically a temperature greater than 100.4.
Okay.
100.4. They may or may not have respiratory symptoms as well. So that being cough, usually a dry cough, significant shortness of breath. There sometimes can be other associated symptoms such as fatigue, muscle soreness, mm-hmm. maybe some gastrointestinal symptoms such as diarrhea. Mm-hmm. But not everybody presents the same. But certainly fever and cough, you know, those are the more common and concerning. Mm-hmm. In terms of incubation period, so it varies depending upon one person to the next, but the average incubation period from exposure to symptom onset can be anywhere from 2 to 14 days.
Okay.
Hence why we ask people to undergo a self-quarantine when you're at high risk of, you know, previous exposure. The average is about 5 days after contact that these symptoms will present themselves, but it can be anywhere from 2 to 14 days.
And the exposure is by air? Is it by touch? Like how is COVID-19 passed along?
Typically through people. Direct close contact.
Okay.
And so that is defined as being in a proximity of less than 6 feet.
Okay.
Okay. For a prolonged period of time. Mm-hmm. And that's usually in the setting of you are a caretaker or you live with the individual, or maybe you're sitting in a waiting room yeah. next to the individual. Close enough to where if they coughed or sneeze on you, that's also considered close contact.
Okay.
And hence why we have implemented the social distancing, because the belief is that if you keep at least 6 feet away, that you will be protected in some sense, that it's less likely that you have had mm-hmm. that direct contact to get sick. Now, we don't believe at this point that it is through airborne contact.
Okay.
But again, this is a new virus. We're still learning things with, you know, each day. Mm-hmm. But as it stands now, it's usually through direct contact. So also touching surfaces. Mm-hmm. So if someone was to cough or sneeze, their respiratory droplets fall onto a surface that you then touch, and then you touch your face, your eyes, your nose, your mouth. That's how the virus can invade and infect.
It almost seems like it's common knowledge, like things that yeah. we've been told.
Yeah.
And when we're in this state of, you know, heightened awareness, we will be more careful. Obviously, we're very cognizant of every mm-hmm. move we're making, mm-hmm. but that's not real life. Eventually, we're going to forget. We're going to get lax. We're going to, you know, just it go back to the way that we once were. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? How do we avoid that? Like, is this new?
Well, I would say this. This is nothing new that we have been recommending. These are the same recommendations we have been preaching and teaching for decades
yeah.
when it comes to cold mm-hmm. and flu season.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that if anything else comes from this COVID-19 crisis, is that we learn how to be better humans. And that means...
Not by way of what I saw at the motherfucking grocery store today. Nope. It was getting ugly in there.
I know, I know.
It was 7:59 in the morning on a Sunday. Okay. People are bumping into each other's carts. Mm.
But
one of those reasons, though, we recently had to write about this. One of those reasons that it gets ugly around now is because for people who are impoverished, while the rest of the world was shopping on Monday and Tuesday, they had to wait till Friday.
Right.
A lot of poor people who had to wait till payday, who are now scrambling this weekend to make up what we've been doing for the past week without them.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another thing that is really mm-hmm. frustrating about this situation, is because all it does is highlight economic disparity.
Yeah.
And exactly. The people that are on the lower end of the totem pole in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really disheartening. Half the time that I leave my house, I'm witnessing a social experiment, you know, like I'm just like watching everybody from a voyeuristic standpoint, watching how people interact with each other. And when I went to the grocery store today, because I'm on the celery juice kick and I needed to get myself some ginger mm-hmm. and just rest just from
yeah.
being exhausted, stressed because of my mom and that sort yeah. of thing. I was frightened by what I saw today at the Ralphs and knowing how much worse it probably is at Costco and stuff like that. Like the Costco thing has really just freaked me out, you know, and I feel like what we try to do on this show is we try to provide our audience with, I don't know, a means in which to change perspective, shift it, go out and promote it, you know, to the next person, you know, paying it forward kind of thing. So is there anything that you can kind of tell people to help them, you know, relax a little bit and just let them know, for the most part, things are probably going to be okay.
Yeah. I think that very point there is that we're going to get through this. We have been through pandemics before. We have people at the front line who are equipped, you know, to take care of us. And that, again, 98% of us will be fine if we come across COVID-19. So that means that we have to take care of ourselves as well as think of others, because we have to protect that 2%.
Yeah.
And that means doing very basic things. Wash your hands.
Yeah.
You know, cover your mouth when you cough. Use proper respiratory etiquette. Stay at home when you're sick. You know, very basic things that is nothing new under the sun. And I think if we, again, think of our health as a global perspective, you know, like you are going to be healthy when the person sitting next to you is.
Yeah.
You're only as healthy as the person sitting next to you. So if you think about it in that realm, then maybe you can kind of open up your mind to say, you know what, I'm going to take care of me and I'm going to take care of you too. Because that's the only way that we're going to be able to get through this. You know,
one thing, and I should have asked this in the beginning. This is one of the first questions I should have asked, but you know, my mind's going a mile a minute. Is when it took a minute for this to be classified as a pandemic.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, okay, well, what the fuck is the difference between a pandemic and an epidemic? And I researched it, but from a medical professional, can you educate the audience on the difference between the two?
So a pandemic means essentially that a virus has spread to a point where it has now had global expansion. Okay. It does not mean that it is more dangerous or more deadly. And you brought up a good point earlier in this conversation. Words are powerful.
Yes, they are.
The terminology that we use is powerful, and that can also affect the psyche of individuals. So I think that it took a little bit longer time, the health officials, to really classify this as pandemic, because that does change the way that people perceive things. Because when you say pandemic, that means that, oh, this is the end of the world. You know, this is the apocalypse. No. It is simple terminology, meaning that now we have a virus that has sustained itself, it is persistent, and it is now in multiple nations, and it now has a global reach.
Okay.
And so now we consider it a pandemic.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah,
I love that about how words matter, though. I love that you said that words matter.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I like about how we're approaching this today that I wish was more prevalent on CNN and Fox and everywhere else is that I always warn people, do not mistake your experience for everybody else's. And so there's always going to be the extremes of the people who are constantly rolling their eyes because nothing's a big deal to them. And then people who are constantly thinking that the world's about to end because they're doomsday preparers. But for those of us in the middle, I think it doesn't serve us to think that just because something does or doesn't affect us in a certain way that it's wrong, that it triggers someone else. And so if we could be less judgmental about people who have different lived experiences and more compassionate, that'd be really helpful, because, you know, that person who's going crazy at the supermarket could be poor and they're struggling to get five cans to feed a family of four a week after everybody else went shopping. Or that person who doesn't want to go into work when everybody else could be actually really sick and have medical complications that they're not talking about. And they're now feeling triggered because of a pre-existing condition. Like, there's so many things that we don't know about people that we think we know about people. So if we could just tell folks to be roll their eyes less and be more compassionate in general while washing their hands, by the way, because why weren't you guys washing your hands to
deal with? I think,
and also the thing about hysteria, I'm going to be honest, there's some people in this world who are so dead on the inside, they don't do what they're supposed to until they're scared. And because of those people, I'm a little bit less upset about some of the hysteria, because I think it'd be a lot more widespread if we hadn't scared a few of those people. So there's a weird nuance that we have to strike between, like, waking up those who are dead and potentially affecting everybody,
I think,
but also showing compassion to those who have, like, actual valid concerns.
Everything you just said is valid. What bothers me is just the big networks. It just, they're so money hungry. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If it bleeds, it leads. And you as a journalist know that that is what they do.
Trust me. I'm very aware that my counterparts have been disgusting in the way that they've been using this for clickbait.
Yeah.
Like they don't have any time to cover the NBA. So now they're trying to use us to like,
And so when it comes to a news organization, a respectable news organization like MSNBC, like CNBC, like CNN, or whatever the case is, with the breaking news and the color scheme of which they use to, the ticker tape and like the headlines and stuff like that, it is inciting irrational, like the irrational fear within us. The doomsday kind of fear that we all have, because we constantly talk about how the planet is overpopulated. Mm-hmm. We constantly talk about the fact that that mankind is basically a zombie apocalypse. We absorb, we rape, we pillage, we take, and the planet is suffering as a result of it. And this might actually be our doing, you know. Climate change, people are not really understanding the ramifications of climate change, and with the ice cap melting and what is underneath of it, microbes that have been laying dormant for tens of thousands of years are now coming to the surface because the ice sheets are melting. And these are things that modern man has not had to deal with or even knows what to do when it comes up. These are things that we are going to have to deal with. And so with a situation like this, the news media, I think, has been the most irresponsible because of how they have taken the story and like just catered to our worst instincts, you know. Not
Fox
to say
Fox News has also done that as well. Yeah, Fox News.
Oh, girl, Fox News. We're not even going to talk about Fox News. We're not even going to address fucking Fox News, okay? Because when Obama had Osama bin Laden killed, the headline was "Obama bin Laden killed," and I was like, "I'm fucking done with you, Fox News. I'm done. It is that is tabloid journalism right there."
I've learned this about Fox News the hard way because Fox News. I worked for a reputable news site, but because Fox News gets as many hits as all the reputable ones, it's like dangerous to ignore them, so we have to begrudgingly see what they're doing. And I think it was really interesting to the point earlier that Fox News said this didn't even exist. They said COVID-19 was man-made by the Democrats to make Trump lose the election. Okay, so it was like 72 hours ago that Fox News even admitted that this was real.
Yeah.
So when I'm talking about how there's some people in this world who are so willfully ignorant that until you call something a pandemic, they won't even admit it's true. Yeah. I'm literally talking about Fox News.
Yeah.
There are people on camera up until Thursday who was like, nah, COVID who? Like, nah, that doesn't exist. And then now they were like, oh, it might be real. Still the Democrats' fault. But
yeah. Yeah, exactly. People watching Fox News saying the Democrats manufactured this shit in order to try and win the election. Oh, and then my favorite are the people that won't go anywhere near Corona beer because that gives you the coronavirus.
It's just crazy.
We're all mental giants, guys, okay? We're all brilliant.
Foodies, I've got another great deal for you. Just like a lot of you, I have a crazy busy lifestyle, and sometimes I don't want to have to think about meal preparation, but I still really enjoy cooking. This is where Every Plate comes into my life. Their meals come with all the instructions and ingredients that you need to make amazing dishes. I just made the spicy penne with Italian chicken sausage the other day, and the leftovers were my lunch the day after because it was so awesome. I also made their Angus burger sliders with wasabi mayo, and it was to die for. It's cheaper than takeout and delivery, and with each meal adding up to approximately $2.99, how could you go wrong? Recipes come together inside of 30 minutes, and when I say they're super yummy, trust me, I'm an undercover fat ass. So here's the part where you save. Go to everyplate.com and enter code 3food to get 3 weeks of Every Plate meals for only $2.99 per meal. That's everyplate.com and enter the code 3food for super yummy, super healthy food.
Just like people not wanting to go near coronavirus, and there was something else that everybody is doing, and it's just like it just has me shaking my head. It'll come up, but
no, I do.
You know who won though? Naomi Campbell. She's the winner of all this.
Girl, bye. With her hazmat suit.
The hazmat suit.
I mean, she was snatched.
We were making fun of Naomi Campbell's plain
attire
for a full year, and now we're all doing it too. Shout out to Naomi Campbell for being ahead of her time on that plain routine.
Right. Yes, her hazmat suit was, what was that, like Louis Vuitton?
No, she literally wipes down every plane that she's ever gotten on her whole career. She takes Lysol wipes and she wipes down every surface of a plane seat, even in first class, before she sits down. And for a year, we clowned her about that video. And now everybody who gets on the plane is blown
out. I was going to say, the planes are probably the cleanest now than they've ever been. Oh, not only because they're fogging, but everybody on the plane is wiping down.
Have you guys seen the New York City subway system? They actually cleaned it for the first time in history. Okay? The rats have nowhere to go. They're like, holy shit. Wait. We don't like this COVID-19 shit, okay? It's making everybody clean up their shit. We don't like it. This is Naomi Campbell. She is the winner, and her hazmat suit was pretty fucking fantastic.
To comment in regards to, you know, what the media has done. Mm-hmm. I do agree with you totally in that the way that it's been presented has been so anxiety provoking because for myself, watching TV and getting anxiety, and I know the data, and it's just like, wait a minute, come on, calm down now. You know, let's pay attention and be informed. And I think that has been the case with the way that this has rolled out mm-hmm. on many networks. Mm-hmm. I do local Fox News, I have to say, a little different.
It's okay.
The national Fox News. Mm-hmm. Okay, a different situation, and I would say that they are responsible in terms of, you know, how they're getting out the information. But I think it's important for us to know that we do have to stay informed. So it is important for us to check in, you know, every now and then to understand what's going on, because this is an evolving process.
Right.
Right. So that means that things change from day to day. And as the public, we do need to know when we have to move a little different.
Right.
You know, whether that be changes on travel restrictions, you know, school closings. Our schools will be closed as of this Monday for most of the, if not all of the school districts across the board here in Los Angeles. So it's important to stay engaged, but not obsessed.
Yeah.
So I think that if we all kind of find that balance in terms of checking in and seeing what's going on and then turning it off, mm-hmm. even for myself, I will check in, I will check CDC guidelines on a daily basis, but then you leave it alone.
Yeah.
You know, and also take into account, who are you keeping around you?
Yeah.
You know, that could also be perpetuating these things.
Right.
Because again, as we mentioned earlier, energy is contagious.
Yes.
So if you were talking to someone who's a hypochondriac,
I don't want to.
Who has, you know, these grand controversial schemes in terms of why this is happening, what's going on, maybe you don't want to talk to that person right now. You know, like, maybe that's not the person you should be having conversations with. And then also taking time for self, you know, like going for a run or doing some yoga, doing some deep breathing, anything that will allow for you to kind of de-stress. Because when we talk about immune systems again, when we are stressed, that suppresses the immune system. Mm-hmm. So when those cortisol levels are high, that makes it easier for us to get infections.
Yeah.
So we have to consider that as well, is that yes, we're washing our hands and, you know, we're wiping things down, but what's happening internally?
Yeah.
So this anxiety and fear that's being perpetuated can also have a negative impact. You have to do away with that.
Yeah.
You know, and so that means there has to be that balance. I'm a yogi. So,
I was about to say, Blue, she's also a yogi. She teaches yoga. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. You can come back when I'm like not quarantined.
Well, we could take a class of hers.
Come take a
class. We'll take the whole crew. Peter comes, everything.
Yeah. I'm probably the only doctor.
I actually got sick after the day after Trump got elected. My doctor said that Trump's election was actually the decline of my health. Because I work in the news.
Wow.
So cortisone levels caused by the media is a very near and dear.
Oh, it's absolutely true. Trump was elected basically on my birthday. I did not celebrate. Yeah, I didn't celebrate that year. I know I was with one girlfriend, and I was just like, "Girl, this is bad. This is bad." We were like, and I was like, "Let's get fucked up." And that was it. That was my birthday. Yeah, it was.
Put the doctor next to you before you say that, Melissa.
She loves Noelle. She really does.
She's chilling over here.
She really is. So listen, in terms of us acknowledging that certain news media outlets may not be the ones that you want to get your information from, where would you tell people? And this is where you all need to use Google, you know, use your common sense. What outlets are providing the most up-to-date information, the most factual information that is not perpetuating fear-mongering and manufacturing more hysteria than is required? Is the CDC's website a website that you would tell people to visit? The World Health Organization, is that a website you would tell people to visit?
Two that I follow consistently is CDC.
Okay.
So CDC.gov, as well as we're in Los Angeles, so LA Department of Public Health.
Okay.
Those are updated on almost a daily basis.
Okay.
And those are things, especially understanding what's happening locally, because it may be different from, you know, county to county or state to state.
Okay.
So LA County Department of Public Health is a good website to follow. They have excellent checklists in terms of, you know, what signs and symptoms are, if you have to be isolated, what the isolation guidelines are, how to dilute bleach, you know, very basic things if you needed to do so. CDC.gov, again, letting us know what the criteria are for, you know, those who should be screened for COVID-19. Again, travel restrictions, helpful tips in terms of what you should do or should, when you are traveling, what are some things that you should be doing during your travel. I do tune into CNN. Okay. I respect CNN.
Okay.
And I do feel that they try to present information in a more balanced manner. I don't believe that they perpetuate fear. I am a fan of Dr. Sanjay Gupta.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of his as well. And if we are going to talk about news outlets, I do like CNN, but you can get stuck on the channel. And if you get stuck on CNN and watch 5 to 6 straight hours of it, you're going to come away from it really drained.
Give yourself a cutoff. That's why I said, you know, stay engaged, but not obsessed. So give yourself a timeline. Say, okay, I'm going to tune in for 30 minutes and I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, and then maybe turn on some Bravo. I don't know.
Bravo,
But something to kind of, you know, change your perspective and get your mind out of that, because it's not going to change anything.
Right.
You know, we cannot be fearful or worry about things that we cannot change.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that balance, there should be balance in all things.
Yeah.
And that means as well as being an informed citizen.
Right.
And so that means putting a timeline on the news and moving on.
Right. I did hear, like, they were going over the checklist of stuff that is run out. You know, toilet paper being at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. One thing I did hear is running out is baby wipes. Listen, if you got a kid and you need baby wipes, but baby wipes will not save you on a plane. There's no alcohol. There's no bacteria killing solvent or, you know, whatever on baby wipes. So you can't use that as a means to disinfect anything.
Yeah.
So just
using it on their butts, Melissa.
I know, but I think here's the thing.
Maybe because they ran out of toilet paper. Maybe that's why
possibly.
Yeah.
But I just want to make sure that everybody is clear that baby wipes are not what you can use
to disinfect.
To disinfect it. Like,
no. Yeah.
This is what you use.
So you're giving Clorox a nice
Clorox. I mean,
is that a sponsor? Turn that around, Melissa.
It really isn't a fucking sponsor, okay? They should be, because right now, you want to know who's winning? Charmin is winning. Yep. Clorox is winning. Purell is winning. And Dr. Noelle Reed is winning because she is all over the freaking news for the last couple of weeks. Like, I'm surprised I could even get her because her schedule is so busy as a result. but you've got to have some disinfecting wipes kills 99% of viruses and bacteria. Staph, E. coli, MRSA, Salmonella, Strep, Kleb, whatever the fuck that is.
So most household disinfectants are fine, and it will say on the label what it kills.
Yeah.
You can also look for EPA certified. Uh-huh. It'll usually say that on the labeling as well, and you know that it will likely kill against most viruses and bacteria.
Okay.
You can use diluted bleach. Let me stress, diluted bleach, not straight bleach.
Yes.
Because some people are doing that and getting chemical burns from using bleach alone. So usually it is like a 1-4 ratio. So you use about, I believe it's a tablespoon of bleach to like 4 cups of water is one method of doing it. But again, LA County Department of Public Health has instructions on how to dilute the bleach. You can use isopropyl alcohol. Mm-hmm. You can use, you know, those sanitizers that or these hand gels that have at least 60% or higher alcohol.
So you can make your own. You know, you can use some aloe. Can you?
Well, I'll be careful with that.
Well, no. Me using a 60% alcohol, some aloe vera gel,
tea tree oil.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I also want to make everybody understand that, like you were saying, this coronavirus is nothing. It's not new.
It's not.
It says it on here.
So the strain that was isolated in December of 2019 is novel. It is new.
That is
But new. Coronaviruses have been around us for a very long time.
So it's basically,
it's a family.
It's a family
of viruses. So okay. Coronaviruses also cause the common cold.
Okay.
You know, so it is not as if, you know, this is a brand new virus that we've come about. It's the strain that has been identified. Coronaviruses also include those infections that I mentioned earlier, SARS and MERS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, coronaviruses in general are not new to us. It's this particular novel strain that causes COVID-19.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I have a question about all of this. And this is me just being, I don't know. I want you to pretend to be Miss Cleo right now and not a doctor. If you have to do a gut
okay.
check, right?
What can I do for you now?
Yes, like call me now. If you have to do a gut check, just based on what you've seen, things that you've seen before when these things have come and gone, mm-hmm. when do you think the peak of this hysteria, as Melissa puts it, will start to come down on that bell curve and will start to be returning to whatever the new normal is? Like, when do you think this whole everybody's quarantined, you can't leave the house, no more brunch for you mindset, we'll go back to, hey, just go outside and wash your hands, please.
Yeah, that is a very good question. I am not clairvoyant. I can't really foresee the future. But I do think that if we get better with testing, okay, which we have been rather poor here in the U.S. with testing, and have a better overview of what the spread actually is, because right now we're kind of in the dark, that will likely allow for us to have some understanding of, you know, what is the full effect this virus has at this point, as well as what is the real mortality rate? Because I think that the mortality rate right now is falsely elevated because we don't know all of those that are infected. When you have a larger pool of those infected versus those who succumb to it, typically, mathematically, that mortality rate comes down. Mm-hmm. And those countries that are testing more efficiently, such as South Korea, have found lower mortality rates and better outcomes.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're doing essentially 15,000 tests a day.
Yeah.
Which works out to be about 3,600 per million.
Yeah.
Well, prior to now, we were doing like 5 to 7 per million.
Yeah. They're definitely,
you know, dramatically not in range, not where we need to be. So their mortality rate, they have found to be about 0.7%, which is kind of, it's closer to what flu is, which is 0.1%.
Yeah.
So I think that when we have more of the knowns as opposed to unknowns, and again, these cases start to kind of plateau a bit, because what's going to also feed the hysteria is, okay, guys, as we test more, we're going to find more. So yes, there is probably going to be a dramatic shift upward in terms of the number of cases. That is probably going to freak people out. But that's what happens when you test more. So I think that once we get to kind of like a plateau point and people see that, oh, Well, there's only been maybe five more cases.
Right.
It's not growing as fast as it has been.
Right.
And perhaps as well, when the travel restrictions are released a bit, I think that may make people feel more comfortable. And so they may act a little differently. But as it stands now, things are still changing.
Yeah.
And they're changing by the day. And we're getting more restricted, which has never happened before.
Yeah.
You know, for there not to be an NBA season, right? People can't even wrap right. their heads around that. For them not to be able to go to certain countries. It's like, what is going on? So that is freaking people out because we've never experienced this before.
Yeah.
So I think that when we have a better hold of where we are in terms of community spread, and there's been a slowing down in the spread, is when people will feel better. When that happens, I don't know. But I do think that testing is key. And, you know, our administration was slow on that. Mm-hmm. And so we are, you know, having to deal with the repercussions of that because we are behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
When it comes to testing.
So March is a wrap is what I just heard.
Yeah. March is definitely a wrap.
Probably.
And just kind of also going back to like the manufactured mass hysteria is things like Outbreak, a movie that came out in like 1996 with Dustin Hoffman and Rene Russo, which y'all probably don't even know who they are. And I remember that movie. You remember that movie, right, Blue?
I remember that movie, yeah.
You remember it?
Vaguely.
Exactly. Well, that motherfucker's back on Netflix right now.
Oh, Melissa, tell our viewers to watch. There's a show called Kingdom. Season 2 of Kingdom is about a virus, like pandemic, a global pandemic, and the president has it and won't be tested. So I'm going to be watching that this weekend.
Well, there you have it. Kingdom, you got to check that out. That's part of what has me frustrated is the fact that these are now trending on streaming services. So people are capitalizing off of our fear. And that bothers me because we need to be vigilant about our health, but we don't need to be frightened into a fucking bunker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that is part of what is bothering me about this whole thing and that I wanted you to help maybe educate our audience on how to control the instinct to panic, you know, and what you can do to protect yourself, keep yourself safe, keep yourself healthy, and help others make it through this, you know? So just for clarity's sake, even if I had COVID-19, there's no testing kits. But my voice sounds this crazy because I was, like I said, at a wedding. I was screaming my head off all day yesterday because I was so excited for my two friends that found each other and got married.
Yeah.
So that's another reason for the voice, traveling, exhaustion, that sort of thing. I know you guys will have your way with me in the comments, but honestly, the whole purpose of this show was to be responsible in the information that we're sharing and to not, you know, bend to rumor in your endo and just foolishness, you know. So that being said, there you go. Don't fuck with me.
You're taking one for the team, guys.
I'm literally taking one for the team because I wanted to stay home and just kind of self-quarantine and rest.
Yeah.
But I thought that this episode was really, really necessary for everybody. Just from what we like to do with our audience, which is, you know, inform in an intelligent, articulate, and enlightening way. So I know you probably want to go home to your family. I need to go to bed because I'm fucking tired. Blue, thank you for joining us remotely.
Blue.
This was fun, though.
Thank you for having me, guys. And by the way, if you know any creatives, like artists, makeup artists, freelancers, whatever, they're all probably really broke right now. So if you have a little bit of extra money and you want to cash app your favorite freelancer, please do that.
Yeah. Us included. We're freelancers. It's rough out here for the self-employed. Let me tell you that. I'm like, oh, I might have to move home with my mom. I don't know how this thing's going to play out. I'm trying to be, you know, positive, but
right.
That word these days, positive, has a negative connotation to it. So,
oh my God, it does.
But On that note, we're going to wrap this up. Dr. Noelle Reed, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you guys for joining us. Hopefully this episode has enlightened you, tickled you, and informed you. That is what we try to do over here at I'm Here for the Food. Binge watch us, because I don't know when we're going to be shooting another episode. I have no clue. I literally have no clue what's going to go on past this episode. So we've given you guys some tidbits. Peter might make, I don't know, like a best of. That's all I got for you guys today, okay? So thank you guys for joining. Be well, be safe, be healthy. Yes. Take care for now.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
If you like our show and the content we're featuring, please hit subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube, and just like your Uber driver asks, leave us a 5-star rating. Also, please leave us a review about your favorite part of the show or your number one takeaway from the episode. We read all the reviews, and this will only help us curate the content that you want to see and hear. Thanks, guys.